approve from September's meeting. We weren't provided the minutes at the last meeting. So I need a motion to approve. Well, any objections to the minutes we were provided with for September's meeting of last year? Seeing none, a motion to approve?
Motion.
Second?
Second.
Any objections? Motion's approved. Okay, the minutes from February's meeting, same thing?
No.
Okay, Tom has to change.
The minutes from February's meeting, I'm sorry. I'm glad I don't know who wrote them because I can't use their name. They are sorely lacking in detail compared to what we normally see in these meetings. I'm sorry, I can't approve it the way it is. I won't vote to approve it the way it is.
All right.
For example, some of the what I remember talking about on the new business where we talked about Hall Sains, there was a discussion specifically about, I think it was hydrilla. I don't remember what it was, but a particular type of SAV that was damaged, and I remember at the end of the discussion having a discussion with Rob to make sure that he got with J.J. Orth about it to make sure that J.J. revisited that compared to the eelgrass, which is the primary thing that we looked at with the prop scarring issues in days gone by. The cobia, we had at least 8 or 10 people talk. And it's very lacking. I mean, if I were to read this, I'd say, okay, 2 or 3 people got up and talked. It really sends the wrong message to the public who would read these minutes and try to understand what happened here. So I would appreciate it if they could. My suggestion would be somebody take the recording and make another go of it.
I think that's acceptable, and I think we'll table that for the time being. We'll bring it up at the next meeting.
Thank you.
Anybody disagree? All right. Thank you. All right, the first issue is sturgeon, and you all need to be updated on what the federal government's doing to us here.
Yes. This will be short because I know we have another bigger issue to deal with. Katie May Lauman, I've been working on the Atlantic sturgeon issue here at CMRC for a little over a year now. I presented this incidental take permit to you all about a year ago, and I've made some significant changes to it based on advice from this group and discussions with NOAA. So I just want to go over basically what the permit is with you as an overview and then the changes that have been made. So because the Chesapeake Bay population of Atlantic sturgeon were listed as endangered in 2012, in order to legally continue any fisheries that catch them as bycatch, we have to have an incidental or individual programmatic take permit. And this permit we don't have right now, but we've been working on it with NOAA, so we're able to continue operating our fisheries. But we have to have this official document that has a requested number of takes, which is the cap of the number of Atlantic sturgeon we're allowed to catch as bycatch, and that includes live or dead sturgeon interactions. It has to have a monitoring plan, and it has to have a conservation plan. And this estimated number of takes has to be based on data, and unfortunately, there aren't much good data available for sturgeon bycatch in Virginia's gillnet fishery. Our mandatory reporting program doesn't require reporting of sturgeon as bycatch, so we had to fall back on Northeast Fisheries Observer Program data. They monitored gillnets, and we used their data from 2005 through 2012, and that included observations on 523 gillnet trips in Virginia waters, and on those trips, they observed 64 sturgeon caught as bycatch. So we took their data and divided it up into areas, the Bay Area, Area 625, and Area 631, and just narrowing down a bit. There were 301 trips observed in the bay with 14 sturgeon caught as bycatch, 118 in Area 625 with 12 sturgeon, and 101 trips in Area 631 with 38 sturgeon caught as bycatch. But we know from what we've been hearing from you guys, from all of the fishermen out there, that there probably is a much higher incidence of sturgeon bycatch, so hopefully through our program we'll be able to get a better estimate of what's actually being caught out there. But in the meantime, we have to use those NEFOP data in order to identify a requested amount of take And that requested amount of take, once the permit goes through, becomes what we're allowed to catch until we re-estimate it. Based on those data and some models we ran, we came up with 1,056 allowed takes of Atlantic sturgeon per year, and 211 of those are allowed to be lethal. So over 25 years, that would equate out to about 26,000 takes, with over 5,000 of those takes being lethal. Our monitoring plan, which is the second part of the permit, will essentially make sure we don't exceed the allowed number, but at least for us, more importantly, it'll allow us to re-estimate that requested number. And if what is being reported to us verbally from the fishermen is accurate, I expect this number, this 1,000 takes a year, to increase dramatically. We have to use data for this, so those data are going to come from our observer program. And right now we have Chris Davis out on the water going on trips with commercial gillnet fishermen. He's been running the program since the spring of 2016, and it's currently operating now. And ultimately, we need to observe 1% of all gillnet trips, and there are specific numbers of trips required for each water body, and that's to make sure we have a good spread of data representing the actual effort that's out there in the fishery. So we need to observe 41 trips on the James River per year, 28 on the York, 6 on the Rappahannock, 36 in the Chesapeake Bay, and 24 in the ocean, for a total of 135 trips. Last year, we only observed 54 trips. We only started operating in the spring, so that's okay, and that year didn't count towards the permit. However, the data that we collect even before this permit is issued, we will be able to use to increase that number of allowed takes. So the more trips we get, the better. We'll have a more realistic estimate of what's actually happening out there, how many sturgeon are there, how many are being bycaught, and what should that allowed number actually be. So far this year, we've had 20 trips, and most of them have been in the James River. We really need to try and get up to those numbers of trips needed for each water body so we can have a good spread of the data can be representative and our numbers can be realistic. So in the future, we need a more even distribution of trips, and we'll be relying on the cooperation of commercial watermen for that. I really, really want to emphasize, please take the observers out on your boats. Encourage people to do that, because the more trips we get and the more sturgeon we observe in the first 3 years of this plan, the better an estimate of that number we have. We won't be facing issues like closure based on what we take. And the conservation plan is how we limit the number of takes we have. And I mentioned the next 3 years. For the next 3 years, we're in the data collection phase. And during this phase of the plan, we can re-estimate numbers. We can come up with different measures to reduce bycatch, and hopefully we will be getting as much data as possible. Hopefully we'll also have people calling in incidental takes, bycatch of sturgeon. The more data we have, the better this is going to be for everyone. So we do have proposed measures that we can put into place if we need to limit the amount of bycatch, if we approach that number of the allowed takes that we currently have. The first is when we reach 75% of the takes, or 792 sturgeon are estimated to be taken as bycatch, we'll have a maximum soak duration, so net set sunrise to sunset, an attendance requirement, and potentially additional yardage restrictions, but those haven't been discussed or determined yet. And then this is the big one that was the most major change to this plan. The previous version of this was once we reached that 1,056, we would have area closures. The new version of the plan is instead of area closures, the commission can vote to continue fishing and just track more carefully how many sturgeon are bycaught, and we'll use that number to re-estimate the amount that we should be allowed to take in future years, and potentially to take a reduction in bycatch in future years. So if we do exceed that number, that's not necessarily a terrible thing in the first 3 years. If we get higher than that number, that means in year two, we'll get higher than that number, in year three, we'll get higher than that number, year four, so on. So that number will increase for every year that we estimate higher takes in the first three. And then years 4 through 25, we'll continue monitoring. We'll have measures we can implement in order to reduce bycatch or prevent us from going over whatever our allowed number is. And some of those have been proposed already and are in the plan, but those are subject to change. It's an adaptive plan, meaning we can make changes to it as we think necessary, as long as they're approved by NOAA. So we're collecting data. Do everything you can to help us out. We're trying to make sure this doesn't hurt the fishery, doesn't hurt the watermen. And ultimately, we need more data. We need a better estimate of how many sturgeon are out there. So, and then they decided to ask us to add sea turtles into this plan because we have 3 species in Virginia's water that are endangered and 2 species that are threatened. They're caught as bycatch in the pound net fishery. So, again, they're requiring us to request a number of takes, which we have no good data on which to base that. So I used stranding data from 2009 to 2015, and there were about 1,600 stranded sea turtles in the Chesapeake Bay in those years, and the most stranded species was the loggerhead. There weren't enough data for a mile, so instead I identified the range of takes per species so we could get an estimate. And that range is just based on how many strandings of each species we had in those years. So up to 121 loggerhead stranded, 64 Kemp's Ridleys, 57 green, 4 leatherbacks, and 10 unidentified per year. We have to request a number of takes based on that, so we're requesting observed takes. The options are either request observed takes or request estimated takes. And if we request estimated takes, our maximum would be 4 turtles total. So we went with observed takes for the current version, which allows us to calculate out a different request per species. That request is 1% of the upper bound of our range of expected takes, rounded up. So obviously you can't have 1.21 loggerhead sea turtles as bycatch. So we round up to 2 loggerheads, 1 Kemp's Ridley, 1 green, 1 leatherback, 1 additional of any species, and 1 hawksbill. And this is just what's observed by the observer program. This isn't total. We know that this is not good data to base this on. So in the next 3 years, again, like with the sturgeon, we're in the data collection phase of this program. So we need to be out there. We need to be seeing what the fishermen are seeing. We need to see how many turtles are actually being bycaught so we can modify this number and get something realistic. Our goal is 22 trips observing pound nets per year. That's 1% of all of the pound nets, and we're going to gather data on any turtle that's caught as bycatch and tag all of those turtles. For our conservation plan, again, we're in the data collection stage during years 1 through 3. And we really need these data in order to get an accurate estimate. At the end of those 3 years, we'll hopefully have enough data to run a model, get something realistic, and then from then on reduce bycatch as needed. In the meantime, because we are required to put in bycatch reduction measures, we have, once we reach 100% of the allowed observed take, the requirements will be for commercial fishermen to call the Virginia Aquarium Stranding Program and let them know whenever they catch a turtle and to report it to VMRC by phone or email. And what this does is it gives us more data on which to base an estimate. So if you call in every time you catch a turtle, we can tally that on there and say, hey, they caught a green sea turtle. We've reached our one. We're going to surpass that the next year. Let's bump up those numbers. We also have, once we exceed that 100%, that other option to allow us to take whatever data is gathered beyond that allowed take and use that to re-estimate for future years. And we have no measures identified for years 4 through 25 yet. That's what we'll hopefully be working with fishermen on and working with you all on in the next 3 years. And finally, we do have an observer program information card that's being handed out and encouraging people to call and report Atlantic sturgeon and sea turtle bycatch. Any data we get is helpful. The most helpful data will be if you catch one, take a picture of it and send it by email. So then we have actual photographic evidence that we can put into our data set, show NOAA, yeah, this turtle was taken, this sturgeon was taken. These are valid data that we can use to update our request of takes. So last time I presented this, I got a lot of feedback from this group, and I've incorporated as much of it as I've been allowed by NOAA into the plan. Any more feedback would be helpful. Any advice on hopefully finding ways to incentivize cooperation with the observer program? We really, really need this. We know that the data this is based on are not great data. We know that there's more turtles and more sturgeon out there. We just don't have the numbers to reflect it.
Is that it? Well done. Just a second. Ernie.
We're just talking about state waters, not federal waters.
Just state waters. Mm-hmm.
Okay, Tom?
I have a question on your math.
Mm-hmm.
You say you're doing 1% observations, and there's 220 pound net licenses, kind of, sort of, and you're doing 22. That sounds like, and I thought a pound net gets set and is more or less used every day for 100, 150 days a year.
A lot of them are not even set.
Okay. Well, but still, shouldn't you be counting number of days that a net is being used?
This number is based on every reported trip that falls within certain criteria of being in certain water bodies in certain areas. So this is an average number of trips over a certain number of years. Whatever trips we observe will be scaled. So we'll scale the number of turtles that are observed to the number of actual trips.
Okay. I'm just curious as to how many actual pound net trips there are.
Yeah, I can pull that for you. That's mandatory reporting data.
I'm concerned that a lot of the commercial fishermen aren't going to identify that they've had interactions with these things in the first 3 years when we're trying to set our base.
Right.
What steps are we going to take to get the word out that this is not the time to be shy?
So Chris has gone out there a few times when striped bass tags were being handed out. We've got this informational card, but this is where we really need feedback. Ideally, we would have workshops. Ideally, we would be going to the fish houses and educating them, but we really need your feedback on what's the best way to do that. What's the best way to reach out to the watermen?
Okay. Scott?
So in federal waters, takes don't count.
Correct.
So your trips that you want your observers on, if they're going into federal waters,
we will only count what is observed in state waters.
Okay, because that's where I was confused, because I've seen at least 12 or 15 trips for federal observers on these boats. That's why I'm confused where you only had one or two, or one in 2016. And
So this is the state observer program. This isn't the federal observer program.
Okay.
So we have our own observer program, and it's totally separate from the federal program. We're working with them to find ways to share data, because another issue is that it is a burden on the fishermen to have the federal observers come onto their boats maybe one day and then we go on their boats the next day, and we are aware that that's a burden, and we're trying to work with the federal program.
Well, our guys don't mind taking observers. They do it all the time, but 90% of the horn dog fisheries in federal waters, 95%, so this won't affect it?
Well, it'll affect it from there. Now, if they're going to, statistical areas. So, unfortunately, those two statistical areas overlap. It has no relationship with the 3-mile line. So we do have to work with them on what was in, we're only going to be doing our best when we're observing the state water.
Right.
And sharing data with them. If the DFOP program has issues, they'll make a statement in four federal waters. So it will impact our fishermen in federal waters, but that'll happen strictly through the NOAA process. We'll, of course, be sharing our data with them, and some of our trips in state waters will contribute to those two statistical areas.
Okay.
But these are federal trips just in state waters that you're showing?
Yes. These data are all from before we had our program.
And I will make a comment about your Zover program. They called me several times last year. I went fishing. I said, you know, I'll start. So I'll call you back. They didn't. Then they called. I said, okay, I'll take you tomorrow. Oh, I don't work weekends. I've never seen those Zover programs that, you know, when they can get a trip, they take a trip. But the difference is they're not salary. Federal Zover's only get paid for trips.
Right. They get paid by the trip.
You know, you're going to have to do something because a lot of fishing is weather-related and stuff. And, yeah, you know, if somebody's willing to take you Saturday or Sunday, you need to go.
All right.
But I said, well, you know, call me back. I'll call you Monday.
Okay.
That was maybe October. Monday hasn't come yet.
Of the two guys that we have here that have commercial contacts, how do we get this message out to the rest of the guys? How do we get them to participate now, not wait 3 years?
Our guys are willing.
You know, it's just, it needs the federal people, they come down around the dock, introduce yourself, go around to a different boat. There's hardly anybody left. That's one problem you're going to run into. It's probably 10% of the people now that it was 25 years ago. So, like that 118 trips in state waters, that's been over a 6 or 7 year period. Probably half of them were me, because I take them into coves and I take them under the beach fishing and stuff.
Right.
But there's not many people fishing state waters anymore.
Right. Everybody's in federal. Because I talked to some of my guys then. I said, have you been carrying observers? They said yes, and they're carrying federal observers. I said, have you had any interaction with sturgeon? And they said, I think Bobby Crusher was the only one who had a take with an observer on. Three other guys I spoke with, they said that there were no observers on their boats, but they each, I think one caught four and one's caught five this year, but they're in federal waters. So even though they're in federal waters, we should encourage them to call in?
Yeah, I mean, if they call in and they have a GPS point, they can tell us where it was, then at least we have those data and we can determine which data points we include in our analyses.
And the hard part is convincing the guys that it won't hurt them.
Right.
That's the,
especially now.
Right.
Right. They feel like, okay, sure, we tell everybody what we're catching, and then we're the first area they're going to shut down. So everybody's scared to death to tell the truth, and it's,
yeah,
and everything in the past that's led up to this point has taught them that
right,
helping hurts them.
And that's our dilemma, because really, especially in these first 3 years, we need as much information as
so we can. So you're sure we need to keep pushing these guys and say, take pictures, take pictures, take,
yeah,
pictures, and I can assure them this is going to help them, not hurt them. Okay.
You know, when we were talking, when Rob discussed all of this at first, the part that got me was, no matter where they called in the first place they were going to close down was 625.
So there are two options of management measures to be implemented in here during stage two, which is the years 4 through 25, and those are potential area closures if we reach certain numbers. But that's starting in year 4, and that's if we don't change it first. And we are going to change it both by the numbers that would trigger anything like that, and the reason we have those areas set up in the plan is because those are the only areas we have data for. We need better data. We need better ways to reduce catch. Honestly, we know there are more fish out there than these data are showing us. And
I'll agree with that.
And if we can get that information, if we can show, yes, there are more fish out there, and we can increase our number of fish that we're allowed to take, then it's only going to help. Those year 4 measures are in there because we're required to have year 4 measures in the plan based on the data that we have. But since the data that we have now are not great data, it really, really handicaps us as to what measures we can put in there. So we're in a catch-22.
How many gill netters, active gill netters, are there? Just roughly.
I got to pull that up.
I don't have many on the shores. Probably between Virginia Beach and Shank, take a handful out of Watson Rig, 25 to take it. But there's some probably on the western shore. I don't know.
But that's for spiny dogfish, right?
No, that's period. There's nobody left.
Period. Yeah.
Katie May, that's all right. It's not a big number.
There's 98 state gillnet licenses, 1,400 licenses for 1,200 foot, 911 Class A, and 323 Class B.
That's licenses, but how many are actually active?
Yeah, I got a Class A unit license.
Active,
I've never done that in my life.
515 per year from Anchored, 52 from Drift, 27 from State.
Yeah, that's trips.
Okay.
This is individual people.
Can we have mandatory meetings for those people?
I mean, obviously we have ways of contacting all those individuals.
Well, I'm saying we could split up. We could have a meeting on the shore. We could have a meeting here, a meeting upriver.
We have a meeting on my dock. We've done that before with
Either mandatory meetings or have at least registered letters sent to these folks explaining how critical it is that they're accurate now. Because it's going to cost them in the end if they're not.
Yeah. Our observer program getting started, we actually had one of those situations where we hired a technician who, wasn't a great fit, left. We're rehiring now. I haven't had a concern that this needs to be managed. I think we could do really the 1% on a voluntary basis without any issues. I think we do need to get the word out that this is the ideal time to get good data for two reasons. Well, maybe three. One, we've been guaranteed we're able to re-estimate and have a higher estimate with better numbers. Two, if those numbers are by area, we can have a much better chance of saying it's legitimate to close an area. Or three, and the most encouraging is the folks that have been working and doing incredible amounts in the James River. I mean, they have absolutely revolutionized what's known about sturgeon in the Chesapeake Bay in the past 5 years. Feel that they can easily put forward measures, kind of like, the way things came through with Monkfish and Tidehound and stuff like that, but measures to help nets, not have any kind of encounters with sturgeon. That they're confident they can easily start recommending stuff. That would be what happens. That would be the trigger. Not a closure, but, something, net modifications, seasonality, those kind of
things. Okay.
So getting the data.
I think Ernie had another comment.
No, not really. I mean, we all know that it's a farce to start with, because when they peer reviewed it, they didn't want to list it, but they went ahead and listed it on the other people's information. So everything the federal government does is peer reviewed by a scientific group. The scientific group said don't list them, and they listed them anyway.
Well, there's one other thing that may be of interest to everybody, and that is we're taking genetic samples of all the sturgeon. And there's also been a lot of tagging work done. And we see that these fish travel. So even though we have a distinct population segment for our rivers, the fish that are in our rivers aren't necessarily the ones that are breeding there. We may have a visitor from Delaware. We may have a visitor from the Hudson River. So the takes will also have to be reassessed based on what population they're actually coming from. Whether or not we're in danger, we may have, a visitor that isn't a completely healthy or healthier.
Okay. Years ago, I had one from Delaware Bay that was tagged 5 times in the Delaware Bay. 5 tags on one fish. He's going to get so he couldn't swim at wild for tags.
Well done, Katie May. You're going to keep us posted, I hope. All right, let us know. Okay, we're going to move on to the topic of the day. Joe, do you have something to present before we start getting answering those 5 data points?
Yes, absolutely. Ryan will present that.
Oh, okay.
Just as a general note to all the public present, make sure you have signed in. There are sign-in sheets out in the little table out there. Every time we have an FMAC meeting, we go to the commission and basically give a summary of what happened, how many people were there. So obviously it pays to know how many public members were there, because it lets the commission gauge how much interest there was in the issue. And obviously there has been a very consistent amount of participation and guidance from the public. So if you haven't signed in, feel free to do that. either now or during public comment. So we were here last month, and I think there are probably two reasons why we had scheduled this one again for the night before the commission public hearing, which is tomorrow. One was that the committee did not have a quorum and could not make a formal motion, but I think the other big reason was lots of members of the public wanted to know what staff was planning to do in terms of making a recommendation for the commission, or at the very least, providing some sort of options with projected harvest that would give a frame of reference for the other combinations of regulations that were coming from the public. So I'm going to provide a little bit of background, some repeated information from last month, but I think between the information we presented last month and the public comments we took, the goal for us is to keep it very focused on these season options. You know, this is the second year we've dealt with this issue, and you know, we know that there are considerable impacts to early closures and reduced vessel limits, and that was all hashed out and will be discussed tomorrow at the commission meeting public hearing. So if we can keep this focused on the projections and the options that we've presented, I think it'll be most appropriate for the committee forming a motion that they would present to the commission tomorrow in terms of what the FMAC and what the public wants to see done for these regulations. Because at the end of the day, I see there as being three voices present tonight. There's the voice of staff, there's the voice of FMAC, and there's the voice of the public. And if there's anything we learned last year, is that there's no one voice that has more power than any other group. The commission last year obviously listened to a lot of different viewpoints and made a lot of concessions from each of our requests. As you know, staff probably lost out the most last year. So I think the important thing to keep in mind is that everyone's voice is valued in this process. So moving forward, of course, this is, you know, generally where staff has come from for the last two seasons. I know, I'm sure people are getting sick and tired of seeing this graph. So this is from the last stock assessment, which used data up through 2011. And this graph is basically showing the estimated biomass of the cobia stock on the East Coast from Georgia up through New York. This does not include the East Coast of Florida. And so basically what this graph is saying, the rightmost part, which is a 2011 data point, shows biomass that is pretty low compared to the years that came before it. And so this dotted line right here would represent the threshold at which a stock becomes overfished. So overfished refers to the absolute number of fish that are left. Overfishing is the annual rate of fishing. So if you undergo overfishing in 1 year, which we've estimated to have done the past 2 years now for cobia between 2015 and 2016, there are ways to bounce back from that. But once a stock becomes overfished, it becomes a little bit more complicated, and the process to recovery can take a bit longer. So that is where the concern stemmed from. And then obviously the estimated recreational landings coming from the MRIP, the federal sampling program, was really the spark that kind of caused all this to become such a huge controversy. So 2015 estimates for landings, North Carolina and Virginia were both really, really high. 882,000 pounds for Virginia, which is obviously a pretty tough pill to swallow. We hadn't seen an estimate like that since 2006. And quite frankly, most people are convinced that Virginia's anglers couldn't quite possibly catch that many cobia in what's really a 90 or 100-day season. And so that was what started all this conflict last year. And then come 2016, the estimates look pretty much the same for Virginia, despite what we consider to be pretty big steps in conservative regulations. So on the left, you can see our 2015 regulations. So from 15 to 16, the minimum size went up by 3 inches. Possession limit stayed the same because Virginia had already had the lowest possible bag limit. Went from having no vessel limit to 2, which was obviously a pretty big jump in terms of reduction. Establishing an August 30th closure, which probably provided some savings just because there are people who still fish in September. And then the prohibition on gaffing, which is not something we're really able to quantify, but The point being, you know, our commission last year took pretty active steps. Instead of taking a June 20th closure, we said, okay, we're going to keep the season open, but we're going to do something about it. And unfortunately, we just didn't get credit for those reductions in terms of the federal estimates. North Carolina put in some restrictive measures last year as well, where they only allowed anglers to go out on certain days. They did some other measures, and they saw a reduction. So you can see them go from 700,000 to just under 300,000. So North Carolina also has a lot more sampling effort than Virginia does. But, you know, the problem that we faced is that we just didn't see a reduction in the estimated landings. So this is just a little bit more specific in terms of what we actually did last year. We had taken the estimated landings from 2013 to 2015, broke them up into those two-month wave periods that MRIP uses. So for Virginia, that would be May, June, and July, August are the two waves that we really see harvest. And we took the regulations that Virginia's commission ultimately passed and said, okay, if we have a 40-inch size limit, two-person vessel limit, closure August 30th, and we look at those projected landings, you know, compared to the last 3 years, we were anticipating something on the order of 330,000 pounds. So that was our justification for passing these measures and saying, okay, the annual catch limit is 620,000 pounds. We as Virginia know that we're one of the bigger players, so taking 330,000 pounds shouldn't be that big of an issue. But unfortunately, the MRIP estimate simply didn't reflect that. So the lesson learned was that our projections are not guaranteed to be a reliable predictor. And so this kind of moved us into a position where we're now saying, okay, well, we know that the MRIP harvests may not reflect what we do. So let's see if we can come up with a set of regulations for 2017 that have conservation value but still ensure pretty good access for our anglers and our charter captains. So what we did for projections this year, you know, I'm going to have full disclosure here. We're doing the same steps that we did last year. So that same pitfall still applies. One adjustment we made was, in addition to moving to the next set of 3 years, which is now 2014 and 2016 as our data, we actually adjusted that harvest downward. So we as staff, you know, are also of the opinion that these numbers do absolutely seem on the high end for what you could possibly imagine coming out of the bay. So we took the standard error of the mean of those 3 years, which is just a pretty basic statistical technique that acknowledges that those MRIP estimates for 14, for 15, and for last year, 2016, they're not going to be the exact harvest. We know that they're not going to get it exactly right. So what we did was we just adjusted it downward to say, okay, if these numbers are wrong, they're definitely wrong by being too high, not too low. So we knocked the numbers down a little bit. You can see here, these were the wave-by-wave estimated landings without that adjustment, and here's what we saw after that. So those are the numbers that we used, and here's one slice of it. We did a number of more projections than this, and I have them later in the slideshow if people want to see them, but what I did here was I chose combinations of seasonal dates and vessel limits that would produce a range of projected landings, just to give the committee and the public some things to go off of at first. And if none of these options seem palatable, we can start looking at the other ones. But I didn't want to present 15 options and then have everybody kind of paralyzed by the number of choices. And I'll come back to this at the end of the presentation so we can have it as a frame of reference. Just wanted to show staff has felt pretty strongly that an increase in size limit could be detrimental to the stock. Obviously, you could see fewer fish harvested if you up the size limit to 43, 44 inches, but then you're putting most of the harvest pressure on spawning females. Females just get a little bit bigger than male cobia, and so if you put that size limit up too heavily, pretty much every fish you catch is going to be a female, which just puts a disproportionate amount of damage on the spawning stock. And obviously, one person, the bag limit can't really go down anymore. And these are just comments on the projections and on the data itself, because, you know, as I said before, these are not concrete methods by any means. They're limited by elements of the data that just make it really difficult to trust and to expand. And then there are real-world effects. So one thing that we had seen last year when we were first going through this was that if you look at the MRIP raw data, which is, you know, publicly available, you can look at all the intercepts for catch, there were hardly any trips that reported three or more fish being caught. And that includes 2012, 2013, 2014, 2015, when there was no vessel limit. So we knew that, you know, not just charter captains, but there were probably some private anglers going out there as groups of people that were catching three, four, five fish in a trip. But the MRIP data didn't reflect that. And the consequence of that is then when we're trying to show that our measures, like a two-fish vessel limit, when we're trying to show that that should lead to a reduction, the MRIP data isn't going to show that, because when you do a before and after the regulations were in place, it's going to look the same. Because before we put that vessel limit in place, there weren't any five, six-fish trips to look at. So that's just an artifact of the data that limited our ability to show that these regulations meant something. Whereas in real life, we know that, you know, you can ask any number of the charter captains that were probably catching five, six fish per trip that obviously weren't catching that many in 2016 because of the regulations. So that really kind of limited our ability to show, you know, and probably one of the reasons why the MRIP number didn't drop down in response to that vessel limit, because it just never had that data in the first place. And then the other big point is that Virginia's highest level of harvest, at least in terms of MRIP, appears to be coming in July, August, and that's something that seems to make sense. We've heard lots of reports that the fishing is very good in September, but if you think about it from a pure effort standpoint, there's going to be more people who are free to go fishing in the summer, whether they're here on vacation or whether kids are on summer vacation for school. And so in terms of doing these projections and deciding on regulations that might provide some reduction in harvest, you would probably look at August or July as more bang for your buck in terms of number of fish days, as opposed to May, June. And so unfortunately, closing off a time that leads to a reduction also means you're closing off relatively more fishing opportunities for our anglers. So there's definitely a balance that needs to be found in that regard. So that's all I had. If the committee has any questions, I'll gladly take them now. If not, we'll go back to that table that just had a few combinations, and we can start from there.
All right.
I have one.
John Bello?
You said you ran a number of different scenarios but only presented four.
Yes.
Did any of your scenarios have no closure in them?
No, because that would just be, I don't want to call it status quo because we had regulations last year, but, you know, if we were doing no closure, you would just take the average of 2014, 2015, and 2016.
Right. One more. Did any of your scenarios run with a closure of August 30th?
None with August 30th. We just did August 31st because that's the last day.
Okay, August 30th. So, but you ran it through the end of August. What was, and 313,000 pounds based on, or 330,000 based on three or four fish, what would that number be if it went through August 31st?
I'd have to look. I probably have them here. Let me just see exactly what that one was. That was June 1st. So you want June 1st, August 31st.
There you go.
So that would be this one right here, 386,000.
Okay.
And so you can see that it cuts it down by about 20,000 pounds or goes up by 20,000 pounds. So those last 2 weeks of August, according to the methods we used, are equivalent to about 20,000 pounds of harvest.
Thank you.
Welcome.
Anybody else? Yeah, Tom.
So what is staff's recommendation at this point in time?
So staff is looking at something that's pretty similar to status quo from last year. Obviously, the same size limit and possession limit of 40 inches, one per person, two fish per vessel, and then a season length of June 1st through August 31st.
Anybody else?
Yeah. One more. Does staff, what's staff's position relative to gaffing?
We as staff decided just not to provide any recommendation. Sometimes that's a position staff takes on fishery issues. And the reason I would say that is simply because all of this stuff, and I know people will chuckle at this, but all the recommendations we make, we attempt to ground in some sort of science, some sort of management policy. And the fact is we don't have any quantitative data on what gaffing does or does not do to these fish. You know, if you look at, so there are plenty of studies that say, that have general discard mortality, so hooking mortality. If you hook it in the gut or if you hook it in the jaw, there are studies that say 8% of those fish will die or 15% of those fish will die. But we don't really have much to go off of in terms of what's the effect of gaffing. And so, you know, instead of saying we don't want gaffing or we want to let people gaff, staff just decided, you know, between the public, between the committee and between the commission to hash that out. You know, obviously we heard a lot of pretty compelling arguments about banning gaffing from piers made it very difficult for some people to bring fish up. And so obviously that's something to consider. We heard charter captains say that it was relatively unsafe to bring a cobia into the boat with a net when there are lots of customers, everyone wants to see the fish, so there's a safety concern there. And so these are things that obviously are very important to consider, but from staff standpoint, there was nothing that we could quantify or even pretend to quantify about what gaffing really does to the stock in terms of conservation benefit or the other side of it, conservation damage.
Okay. All right. Tom?
I would request that if you use that same line to the commission, you should also say that there were charter captains up here that said it did not present a problem to net fish.
Absolutely.
It went both ways.
That's included in some of the public comments, and we actually, I think in summarizing the FMAC meeting from last month, I brought that up at the request, but absolutely provide both sides to that.
Okay. I want to add a couple of things here before we start talking. Are your regulations considered, are you considering number of trips per day or fish per trip or fish per day on the boat limits?
So that's number of fish per boat per day.
Per day, so, not per trip. So a charter captain that makes two trips?
You keep two fish.
So it's one trip per day, basically.
Per day.
He can only make one trip.
All right, well, we'll need some comment on those as well.
Sure.
And then, do you know what the discard mortality is for a hooked cobia?
I think the literature is somewhere between 5 and 10%.
I consider it pretty low.
Yeah, I think the last stock assessment used 5%. You know, it hasn't been quite as extensively studied as, you know, some of the reef fish that you catch from really deep depths. You know, there are tons and tons of paper, length and depth-based mortality. I don't think the science is quite there in cobia.
If I may.
Sure, yeah, Joe was.
Just one of the other things is it was less likely to be discarded. You know, it was a kept fish. You know, other than the size limit, which has been in place for a long time, there were, when you know, it's been fairly recent that folks have had to worry about things like vessel limits and stuff like that. So it wasn't as big of a concern as it's going to be in the more recent years where there are reasons for more regulatory discards. But
okay.
They are hardy fish, and for the most part, the assumptions are somewhere between 5 and 10%.
All right. One other thing we'd like to keep in mind is if we go to more than two fish per day, it's still one fish per person. Does the captain and mate count on that?
Yeah, I think it would.
We've never wrote any specific rules.
Okay. Tom?
So last year, MRIP said we caught 919,000 pounds of these things. What is the goal? Is the goal 300,000 pounds? Is the goal, if we knew really what the number was? Well, I'm looking at, we're going to have this new program next year.
Sure.
Yeah, we're going to have this new program next year where we hopefully will have a handle on at least cobia, how many we actually land, and how many are caught and released.
Sure. I think this year in particular, knowing that federal waters are already closed, which means negligible harvest from Georgia and South Carolina. You know, the most defensible thing we can say is that that 620,000-pound recreational catch limit is what we're shooting to stay under, given that North, you know, considering the fact that North Carolina is also open. You know, and our real-world catch value may be around 330,000 pounds. And so I don't know if there's an exact number that we should or want to be shooting for, but...
But it's not 600,000 pounds.
Well, not from staff standpoint, no.
I'd like to make a comment on that.
Please.
This year, there are no state allocations. Next year, ASFMC most likely will be involved in cobia fishing, and most likely there will be state allocations. If you look at the last 10 years, not counting 2016, Virginia has caught 47% of the cobia on the East Coast from Georgia through New York. So we should, when this thing is hashed out, end up with roughly about 50% of the quota if it's done on a historical average. So somewhere in that range in the future will probably be our goal.
Thank you. That's a very good point. And I wouldn't feel too bad about your numbers that you estimated for last year not matching up, as you said. They didn't match up MRIP's numbers. They may have matched up what we actually caught, though.
Yeah, who knows?
So, yeah. I have a lot more confidence in his numbers.
Yes, so do I, by far. Okay.
And before we get into it, these are the three tables that we have. I'm not sure anyone's really going to want to look too much at the one fish vessel limit table, but it is just broken up by vessel limit and then different combinations of starting and ending dates. So this is all we have. Anything else that if someone from the public has a suggestion that we don't have up here, obviously we're not going to be able to give an exact number, but I will say that September, if you look at MRIP data, there's almost no estimated harvest for Virginia in September and October. So if anyone suggests anything that goes into September, it's going to look roughly the same as something that ends August 31st, just because we don't have much to go off of in those months after summer ends.
Okay. Can you show those slides on the same screen at the same time with those four data points that we want answered?
Jeff, can
sir?
I interrupt one thing?
Sure, Russ.
Can I ask Ryan to comment on one thing?
Sure.
Explain to them about the difference between the ACL and the ACT.
Oh.
This year we would actually be fishing under the ACT, not the
yeah,
ACL.
So the way that these, the way the management plan is set up, we have an annual catch limit, which is, that's sort of that legally binding value. If we go over that, we're, you know, quote unquote in trouble. The annual catch target is a value that's lower. So the annual catch limit, the ACL, is 620,000 pounds for recreational, 50,000 pounds for commercial. So if the recreational exceeds its limit, as it's believed to have done the last couple of years, when NOAA has been conducting these analyses to say when should we close next year to ensure that we don't exceed that again, they're actually doing these calculations based off of a 500,000-pound limit. So last year, when the closure was June 20th, they said, okay, using the harvest behavior from 2013 to 2015, we believe that the coast will catch 500,000 pounds by June 20th. And so they closed at June 20th. Now, if we had somehow as a coast caught 550,000 pounds last year, there wouldn't have been any issue. Nothing happens if you exceed the annual catch target. That's just what they use to try and compensate for an overage in the previous year. It's sort of like a conservative effort. You know, the stick comes down when you go over the ACL, no matter what. So, but to Wes's point, the ACT, you know, that target of 500,000 pounds is what NOAA looks at after an overage. You know, after the catch limit is exceeded, they're looking at that 500,000 pounds as their goal for projected harvest in the next season.
Okay.
If you want, I can just leave these up, and if the comments, you know, get pretty far away from this, then we can start looking at the other ones. Or
well, I'd like to have these points up so that we can address them one at a time.
Sure.
And I don't know how you can do that, if you can put both up.
Yeah, I had to work quickly, so I have it open in a PDF, so let's... let me see if I can manage.
There are a number of points that the VMRC provided to us staff provided to us that they need to go to the commission tomorrow for them to make their decisions. So this is what we would like to get your input on, get the committee's input on first, and then the public's input as well.
I don't think anybody cares about the numbers of fish landed or pounds landed.
The estimates? I think there might be a that's yours, right? All right, if you can't, just put up the five. Sure. Thank you. All right, now first we'd like to get the committee's opinion, then we'll listen to the public, then we'll come back and see if we want to revise our opinion as to what we send. And I would imagine that tomorrow staff will present both the public's opinion and the committee's opinion.
Yes, correct.
Okay. As far as the committee goes, is anybody ready to say that... we want to stick with the 2016 regs?
I would like the general consensus of the public for that, because if it works for them,
I think we want to give a little guidance first, and then we'll get their opinion if they can live with it.
I think the seasons and the catch per person from 2016 is a fine thing to go with. I think the real debate is whether we increase the per vessel per day number of fish from 2 to 3 or 4, one of those numbers. I think that's the real issue. And I know from last time with most of the charter captains that were out here, it was pretty unanimous that 4 was the ones that they wanted. My concern of that is, you know, MRIP might be a little bit closer to right than we thought. I mean, that's...
So split the difference at 3.
Well, let me add a little something here. North Carolina this year, according to their regulations that are posted on their website, which I've gotten some conflict from different people on this, the North Carolina regulations off their website say a 33-inch full length and 2 per person per day. That was as of March. No, they weren't, but this is March of 2017's regulations posted on their website.
Yeah, I was looking at that today.
Yeah, that's incorrect.
Okay. All right.
I think it was 36-inch fork length, which is about 40 inches total length.
And 4 per vessel.
Yeah, this has no vessel limit on it at all.
It's 4.
Because that's wrong.
Because, Well, just keep both in mind. It really, we set our own, but okay. John, I think you were next.
I was going to say, if Tom, what I heard last month, and I think I just heard Tom saying, no change in the date, so June 1 to August 31st, right? Still 1 per person.
Last year, it opened January 1st, so there was no established like June starting date. So there was a closure date of August 30th, but you could catch them at any point before that.
Okay.
the question is.
So what we're trying to come to some agreement then.
Right.
From what I heard from the group last month, it was closure at the end of August. They really didn't want any gaffing. They were okay with one fish per person. They wanted to see a higher limit per boat. And I think the number that was kicked around generally was four per boat, with one per person.
Okay. One per person per day. No comment on the gaffing. Daily limits, trip limits.
It's got to be a daily limit versus a trip limit.
Right. Well, that's what we're saying so far.
In the regulation, it is daily vessel limit.
Right.
I don't know if they're enforcing it that way or if charter captains are abiding by that particular letter of the law or not, but I'm not going to ask.
Wes, do you have any other changes?
I strongly think that we should keep the no gaffing rule. I think there's a tremendous amount of fish lost on the gaff, or with a smaller vessel limit like we will probably end up with, that fish could be gaffed and then dead discarded. There's no problem netting fish. You know, I don't see any reason for having to gaff a fish. I personally netted fish up to 82 pounds solo. I know people that have netted fish up to 99 pounds. You know, a 13-year-old mate on a boat netted, you know, 300 fish last year. Now, there's no lose. We don't have gaffing for striped bass, and there was a reason that we didn't allow striped bass to be gaffed, because of the release mortality. You know, there's 100%, there's a very good chance that any fish that comes off of a gaff, and they will die. If you lose a fish because you're trying to net it, I would say there's 100% chance that it will not die. There's no reason to have to gaff other than the thrill of it. I would rather have the thrill of fishing longer and have the fish around.
Can you see an exception for piers?
Yes.
Okay.
Although I had people contact me, Billy Red Farm was the only person that contacted me last year. I didn't have many people contact me about that problem, but
okay. Scott?
What's the difference in a pier between gaffing and netting? I mean, you got to have a long gaff or a long net, right?
Because netting in a boat is easier than netting on a pier for a cobia.
Yes.
Okay. It's the reason that.
And the pier gaffs are cheap. You can have your own pier gaff, but very few pier anglers will have a drop net that they use. Most of the piers have a drop net.
A drop gaff.
Pardon me?
Have a drop gaff.
No. I don't think they do that because there's enough individual anglers that bring that gear with them. It's just a big figure of trouble. It's weighted and just drop it down. It's easy to carry around. But I think maybe the deers could be concerned about flatbillies. They're sharp hooks. You know,
okay. I would say every pier angler has a gaff. If he's cobia fishing, he has a gaff already.
Okay.
You know, and what he was saying, that the piers, a lot of them have nets, but, you know, it could present a hardship for them netting fish.
Okay. Ernie? Any thoughts? Preferences?
Well, I'm going to agree with him. I imagine the mortality is 100%. If you're keeping a fish, it's going to die anyway. But if you're releasing a fish, I mean, gaffing, what, you know.
You're not going to
gaff it.
Yeah, me too.
I'm not hung up.
Tom?
You're not going to gaff it. He's not going to gaff it. Most of the charter captains will look at a fish and say, yep, that one's not going to make size. We're going to net it, get our gear back, and turn it loose. But I can assure you that there are Joe Blow redneck fishermen out there who will gaff everything they can. Because, you know, it might be big enough, and I don't want to risk losing it with my net. I've seen it. And
well, unfortunately, there are those that will gaff it and then keep fishing and throw the dead one over if they get a bigger one.
Yeah.
I agree. And it's a... Skip?
I mean, when we catch them on the head boat last year, they netted the ones that... And we caught them more than we've ever caught last year, and they didn't have any problems netting them.
All right. What do you think of the other points?
I think it should go to four fish on the boat limit and leave the seasons the same.
Seasons the same. Okay.
So that would be no designated opening, but it would be August 30th.
So that, I mean,
August 31st closure, whatever we decide.
Yeah, we would like to get to August 30th.
So that actually is a good question for the public. For you charter guys, it would be better to have, in my opinion, an opening date. It can be relatively early, but not a opening right now. And if you can think about, from a business standpoint, when is a good opening date?
Just knowing that it's open would be nice.
I mean, if you're going to know tomorrow whatever the rules are going to be.
I don't think the date so far that really justifies anything as far as when it starts and when it doesn't start. Just knowing that it's open is going to
But the point is, from a business standpoint, when do you feel comfortable saying to a customer who calls you tomorrow or on Wednesday would be the earliest you'd want them to come in expecting to catch fish, not hoping to catch fish? Yeah, so that's a question when you come up and talk, that giving that answer to the microphone would be very useful.
It's keep in mind, it's not going to make a difference in the estimated catch, apparently, at least not by much, because the early catches are so small. But it also doesn't, if you give too late an early start, it doesn't give you the flexibility with the waters warming up like they are. We don't know when they're going to show up this year. It's been a mild winter. We may be in for some big surprises. Anybody else on the committee have any comments at the moment?
I like the four fish also. I think it's important for the charter boats for customers.
Okay, what?
I'd like to see it go to four.
Okay. Do you have something else?
Everyone else in the room will want a four fish boat limit, but I don't think we should have a four fish boat limit.
All right. We can bring that up when we come back. Okay. All right. I know that there are a lot of people that don't like the numbers, that don't like the way the Florida line was drawn and such. And we're not really going to be able to change any of that today or tomorrow. So this is what we need to pass on to the commission to make their decision. And they want to know your opinion of basically those things, A through G, and any other items that you might want to bring up. And I'll read them off to you. No change from the 2016 regs. Vessel limit of what? 1, 2, 3, or 4 are up there. Season start date, a closure date. If you think those dates are important to you, let us know what they are. Or what you can live with, I guess, is another way to look at it. Any change in the minimum size? It seems like everybody's pretty happy with that. Do you think we should or should not have gaffing? And if you have any objection to the per day or per trip regulation. Right now we're at per day, so that means a charter captain, if he gets his daily limit on his first trip, can't take a trip out again in the afternoon. And that may be important to some of you, so that's what we want to hear. Who would like to be the first, please? All right, come up, give us your name, tell us who you represent. Joe, I guess you guys are taking counts. Please, appreciate it.
I'm Bill Gorn with Boat Up Lures. I manufacture cobia bucktails, and I've also had the honor to speak on behalf of a lot of the people in the room today while at the South Atlantic meetings, scoping meetings, webinars, and every other possible meeting related to cobia. Our goal is to always have somebody there that could voice an opinion and go on record. I recently got back from the last South Atlantic meeting where Rob O'Reilly did a fantastic job representing the interests of Virginia, so his friendship points are good. But it's just another example of how important it is for Virginia to have representation, and how us not having representation, you know, led us to the situation that we're in. it's not defendable by science, by data sets or anything else. Some of the questions, what I did is I digged into the stock assessment. I looked at each state's research, anything and everything that you could learn about cobia. How did this happen? Why is this happening? You know, we're seeing more and more cobia. They're healthy. They're robust. The head boats are catching them. I thought all they caught was croakers. But, croakers. But, that's obviously not the case. And what we ultimately found was very shocking. It's just the absence of anything related to Virginia, whether it be numbers, graphs, the word Virginia or Chesapeake Bay itself, and CDAR 28, which is the last stock assessment. But the mortality rate per the last stock assessment is 5%. I've seen stuff from South Carolina that was 1%. And as far as a catch and release fishery, which I debate, but you know, South Carolina has it at 50% catch and release. Doesn't make sense. A lot of stuff doesn't make sense. Very contradictory. If you're only catching one per boat, how are you releasing 50% of your catch, or why would you? But I completely agree with what the staff has said regarding the data poor with the intercepts, and that's the main problem. That's the whole problem with Virginia not being able to say, if we go from 6 per boat to 4 per boat, here's our true reduction. I've met with Doug Mumford, who's our data collector, former data collector of North Carolina, for 4.5 hours. And we went around and around and around because I wanted to see, is it really 1 per boat? Is that really what's happening? And for Virginia, all 3 documented data sets that I saw, it wasn't the case, but it was only 3. So how can you use that? It sounds a lot like sturgeon. I never thought I'd bring up sturgeon, but after listening to it, it's actually been our position for the next 2 to 3 years. It's going to take at least 3 years to get the next stock assessment. And in that time, what we have said is we need to keep our seasons open and at levels that aren't so restrictive that we're going to come out data poor again. And with extremely short seasons, it's going to compress effort, and it's also going to limit our data collection with fish that come into the bay, because I personally believe they come in waves. Also the low boat limits and the PSEs. You can get into that, but I won't. As far as projections, and why our catch was so high, what we ultimately learned was that in 1 week in July, we caught over 450,000 pounds of cobia. Unbelievable. I pushed for North Carolina to do the mandatory reporting like Virginia is doing and to take it seriously. Clearly, MRIP is either out of control or not competent or not able to project catches for cobia. I think they just determined that for red snapper. I can't wait till they do it for cobia. It's just absurd. But some of the things we got out of the last South Atlantic meeting was that we're pushing emergency action, because under the current ACL, even the Atlantic states will tell you how they're going to do it without putting all of us out of business. For myself, an August 14th closure is actually a July 31st closure. Tackle stop buying 2 weeks before the season. It's over. And with the catch being so low those last 2 weeks, why close it? Even if it goes into September, why close it? We're getting more data. We're getting more intercepts. And it's helping the economy. And if our emergency action doesn't work or they don't go through with it, we're going to be hurting for years to come. So we better have it, better hope we can get it this year. Another position point has been, fair and equitable access as compared to every state along the migratory route of cobia. And the east coast of Florida has a 365-day season. Federal waters still, it's 2 per person. State waters, it's 1 per person. But the east coast of Florida and Florida in general, you can have a federal limit as long as you're not observed fishing in Florida waters. So, what many of us had agreed upon, and they may change it based upon their new information experience, was a one per person, max four per boat, a season start date of June 1, and an end date of September 14th. Piers be allowed to gaff. I started out as a pier fisherman. I speak to a lot of pier fishermen. I hope they're here tomorrow. They probably won't be. But, you know, the not being able to gaff, because it's really you have one, two chances to get that fish on deck. And a pier gaff is huge. It requires a very big net, like you see for drum fishermen. But unlike drum, cobia are very, they fight a lot more than a drum does. As far as the gaffing goes for the boats, it definitely was general consensus that you should have a net on board, but gaffing be optional. Obviously, not be banned, pretty much, but you have to have a net on board and to report your catch. I'd love to answer any questions you have.
One question I have, you said one per person for the fish, which is what we've got. A boat limit?
Boat limit four.
Four, okay.
Size?
40 inches.
Same thing size-wise.
Another point of the increase in the minimum size, you notice the, you may have read the Gulf amberjack season, I believe was closed today or this week. What they found was increasing the size actually increased the average weight. And the same thing, even though there's no weight correlation with cobia that I've read, they seem to have given us about a 5 pound, well, some. The actual average weight went down this year somehow. Okay. But there is a difference. You know, if we go up any higher, they are going to add poundage.
After finding out about the no penalty for starting earlier, you wouldn't want to back up your date to like May 15th? Rather than June 1st?
It's kind of like with North Carolina. I want it to be fair and equitable, but also want it to be somewhat smart. I think from the economic standpoint, you know, even the charter captains are getting the most in that mid-season. You know, people aren't out of school. But if they feel, and I hope they speak out, a May 15th start date is appropriate. You know, that would be up to them. But the June 1, I think, truly balanced the perceived need for conservation and being able to capture the economic benefit.
Okay. Anybody else got any questions? All right. Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Next, please. Yes, sir. Oh, I'm sorry.
1 second. I apologize. Maybe unfortunate task of sitting on the cobia working group that's going to be considering things like allocation. In one of the comments that I made that I said I hope, you know, is really pressed at ASMFC when they have to make management decisions is the fact that there are things that we, you know, can probably just intuitively assume about what might be good for the stock, even if we can't prove it with the MRIP data, which we all know is lacking. So stuff like early closures that allows fish that are coming in to spawn, that chance to spawn. In other words, closing in, having a closure in May before these fish have a chance to spawn, as opposed to a closure in September when, you know, assuming most of them are post-spawn, does have a biological benefit. Even if we can't show it on paper, this needs to be more than a paper exercise. You know, I just want to put that out there. I hope that our commission considers that. I think it's staff's responsibility to point that out, and I am also going to be pressing that to the ASMFC Management Board that, you know, there are reasonable considerations that we can make, even if we can't show the paper exercise of X amount of savings in the following year. So I just wanted to put that out there before people make comments, and obviously I think, you know, Billy already covered that with his stuff. But
good point. Thank you very much. Yes, sir. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for allowing me. I'm Bob Reed from Reedville area, mouth of the Potomac River. and we have seen or been fishing on a tremendous increase in cobia the last 3 or 4 years. The only comment I'll be real quick that I would like to see is, and I think most of the charter captains, well, I won't speak for them, but a lot of them have mentioned it, and a extension into through September, or at least mid-September. And this gentleman seemed to point out, what I heard, I thought I heard, was that that would not have any significant impact. It looks like there overall that would not be a factor in the total catch, but it would help us. I think, you know, one of the issues I have with VMRC and other fishing organizations is they're looking at the lower bay. You know, what about the mid bay or up around, you know, Smith Point? I fish from Rappahannock River to the mouth of the Potomac extensively. I used to be mostly on the eastern side. Now I'm on the western side because the fish are there. And we're getting more fish in July, August, and September. And we have to cut it off at last year, the end of August. So please take that in consideration. Those fish are moving up the bay. Thank you.
One question, if I may. Do you think those fish are as big as they are further down the bay, or is it smaller fish that are moving up further?
Big. They're real big. I caught one fish under 40 pounds. Everything was 40 to 55 pounds.
All right, thank you. So
that's what I'm seeing. Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, sir.
My name is Pat Link. I'm a recreational fisherman. Billy stole some of my thunder, I think, so I'll go through this fairly quickly. One thing I hope you guys keep in mind is that right now you have a lot of buy-in from us. We're all here. I mean, I don't think you get very many meetings that have this many folks sitting in them. And to not recognize that, and to not recognize that we're in kind of a situation where we can collect data and hopefully usable data, you're not going to get this opportunity again. We all know it. You've seen it in other fisheries. It's not going to happen. So I'm urging you guys to also maybe put some pressure or ask the questions to staff to get us usable data in the mandatory reporting. I know currently they're not planning on requiring weight and length. I personally feel that's a mistake. I feel like if we're going to go for it, we need to have data that we can stand up, and hopefully they'll stand up for us at these council meetings and use. So that's the first thing. Another thing to keep in mind is that historically Virginia has had the strictest creel limits of any state in the East Coast. And I would question whether or not maybe we're reaping some of those benefits now. And we are seeing a fantastic fishery because we have been extremely conservative through the years. You know, there are guys in this room right now that have caught more fish in one day than MRIP measured and weighed last year to get us to that 919,000 pounds. I'm not going to sit on the data, and you know, but it's ridiculous. We all know it's ridiculous. Yeah. And that's the truth of the matter. Limiting the season will also change the effort. You need a baseline to compare some of this stuff to, and if you keep shrinking the season, you're not going to have an accurate representation of what the season should be. And another thing to keep in mind is that when the stock assessment happens, catch data is the major driver for stock biomass, in cobia in particular, because it's a very fluid-moving fishery. They move a lot. They're pelagic. You can't go and do echo soundings like you can with sea bass and tell biomass stocks based on that. These fish are moving. So the catch data is what drives these stock assessments and the biomass total. So if we keep limiting our season and shortening our seasons, we're going to have less catch, hopefully, in theory. But we're also going to show a declining population based on our catch totals going down. And that's artificial, but that's what will happen. I mean, I've read the stock assessment from, you know, all 400 and some pages of it. That is the driving factor, is catch data. So keep that in mind when we're talking about limiting seasons, is that we're perpetuating the issue by limiting catch. Another thing, I guess Billy kind of touched on it, but the representation, we don't have it. Florida has three voting spots on a panel that manages our ACL, and they're not even part of it anymore. We have two, and that's only because the Mid-Atlantic offers us up one, as you know, the Mid-Atlantic representation. Then we have, I believe, Wes is on that panel as well. Another thing to keep in mind, there will be no repercussions to having a full season currently. I mean, there's nothing, you know, we do need to be a steward to the resource, but I heard it a lot last year. I haven't heard it as much, but the scare tactics that this could happen or that could happen, there's nothing that can happen currently as it sits. My recommendation would be to kind of follow what North Carolina enacted, which is a 4 fish per vessel limit. As far as the season dates, it sounds like there's no reason to close it in September based on what we heard from staff. So I would say no end season date at all. As far as on the front end, it does make some sense to try and protect the spawning biomass, but June 1st start doesn't do that. The fish are just getting into the bay June 1st. So if you want to protect them, you're not doing it by closing it in May. So my recommendation would be a May 15th start with no end season. The gaffs, I could go either way, but I like the recommendation of at least making a net mandatory on the boat and let people choose what they're going to do. And other than that, last year we had the 1 fish over 50 limit, and I like that. I think that is being, you know, conservation-minded. It's protecting the larger spawning females, and that, to me, is doing our part in being part of the process. Once again, we were the strictest last year and we had the most catch, so I don't know what any of these are going to do as far as the numbers are concerned, but that's kind of my recommendation.
All right. Thank you very much. Yes, Ryan.
I almost hesitate to do this because I'll get accused of going back on my word, but just to clarify for the record, talking about September harvest, the point that I was making is that if you look at the MRIP numbers, it seems as though we don't catch much in September. I've heard from plenty of people saying that I catch a lot of fish in September. Cobia fishing's still good. So the point I was making was that from this projection standpoint, you wouldn't see much difference between August 31st and September 15th, but obviously if you weren't open in September, you would have some real-world conservation benefit. So just something to keep in mind. Didn't want to my wording may have been confusing. I just didn't want to mislead anyone.
Okay, we appreciate that. Tom?
And furthermore, just to add into it, next year we will have data because we'll have mandatory reporting.
Sure. Okay. Yeah, even on the leases.
Great. Thank you. All right. Who else would like to speak? Educate us a little bit. Give us your opinion. What about dates? Dates are critical. Okay, good. Right.
Sorry, I've been kind of losing my voice lately. I'm Mike Avery with the Virginia Saltwater Sport Fishing Association. I'm a recreational angler and also a charter captain, takes paying customers out to fish for cobia. But I also like to go out and fish for fun with family and friends, too. I'm going to give a position from both sides, both from my organization and from my personal position, because they kind of are two different positions, so I hope that's okay. 27. Think about that for a little while. That's the number of observed fish in Virginia. And 27 fish became over 900,000 pounds. That's just absurd. It's laughable. We should all not even acknowledge it. We should not accept it. We should just toss it out. Throw out the baby with the bathwater. Don't even accept the MRIP numbers. It's not even defensible on any level. So why are we trying to get under a number that MRIP is driving when the numbers are just laughable to us? They're just not even close to reality. We shouldn't even acknowledge them. VMRC shouldn't even acknowledge them. Just throw it out. Throw out the baby with the bathwater. Having said that, we are still conservation-minded. And when we reached out to our members within VISA and asked what they'd like to see, and we did some polling, we developed a position that is relatively conservative in nature. So we kind of adopted at least the numbers from last year. So the VISA position is we'd like to see one per person 40 inches with up to a two-boat vessel limit, and we're okay with the only the one being over 50 inches. That's very conservation-minded still. That's kind of the regs from last year. However, looking at the 27 fish observed and the observed MRIP numbers, we don't think we can defend any closures of the seasons. We've all acknowledged that the main effort is Memorial Day to Labor Day, basically the summer months, or when the kids are out of school. So anything a little bit before that and a little bit after, yes, there are fish to be caught, but the level of effort is really not that significant. There's just simply not near as many anglers on the water once school gets back in session after Labor Day. So our position is there should be no close season. You're not really getting any savings by closing us down any of the dates. Just let us have the season. When the fish show up, we start fishing for them. When the fish leave, that's the off-season's done. The savings you get is not enough to worry about because the level of effort is just not there. We're okay with the 40 inches. I also think on the per day, it should be a 24-hour, one trip per 24-hour period, just like with striped bass. Midnight to midnight, just one trip is all you're authorized per vessel, per permit holder. The gaffing, I would still like to see no prohibition on gaff. To Wes's point, I would agree that if we had on the boat all experienced anglers like Wes is, and my friends are, and the people that fish with me, we're all experienced anglers. We know how to net a fish with no problem. But when you're talking about a charter, what you have on the boat are a bunch of inexperienced people, people who've never seen a cobia or maybe have seen it once or twice in their lifetime. We have children on board, and we're trying to keep them safe. And a net, a fish flying around in the net, trying to get the fish out of the net, flopping around the deck, can present a little bit of a hazard for inexperienced anglers. All the anglers I know, they always carry a net and a gaff, and if the fish is undersized, we net it. If it's questionable in size, if we're not guaranteed that it's a keeper-sized fish, we always net it. So the vast majority of the anglers out there are honest anglers, we're conservation-minded, we know what to do with a gaff, we know how to handle a gaff. Yes, I agree with Wes, there are an occasion that a cobia, you know, just flops off somehow. But those are very small numbers. They're inconsequential. And, yes, there are a few bad apples out there who's going to not handle a gaff very well. But we're talking about very small numbers. So don't punish the majority of the honest anglers out there who are conservation-minded, who know how to handle things, and start putting these restrictions on them. They know how to net a fish. They know how to gaff a fish. Let them have their choice when the situation presents. So I don't think we should have gaffing restrictions in Virginia. We already have too many rules out there. We don't need to keep adding more rules to our anglers. Okay. Now, just one caveat, what I'd like to see personally as an angler myself and as a charter captain myself, I would like to see four fish per boat. So that's the only difference I would say as a personal Mike Avery position. I'd like to see the four fish per boat on the days we have a good day. And as a charter captain, most of the times you have four paying customers on the boat that at least enables them to bring home one fish. As a charter captain last year, I got into the discussion about the two fish per boat limit, and we had four customers on board, and them going away with a half a fish, the conversation always became, well, what else can we fish for? And so what else is there besides cobia? And I'm not just a cobia captain. I can fish for other things. And so a lot of times they steered me away from cobia. All right, well, let's go try for something else. So I would like to have the opportunity to give at least, you know, whenever you're talking about a charter customer, they're only fishing once per year, maybe twice per year. So let them bring home one Virginia fish with up to a vessel limit of four per vessel. Any questions?
That's not Mike. We really appreciate it. Thank you. Okay, good. Come on up.
My name's Josh Bourne from Virginia Beach, a charter captain with Wingman Guide Service. I own it. I'm a single father, a Marine veteran, three combat tours in Iraq. I've chose to make my living on the Chesapeake Bay, both waterfowl hunting in Maryland and then fishing in Virginia. So I stand to lose about $3,000 a week. You can do the math based on the closure. So I recommend that no closure. Let us decide when the fishing's good. Let us keep that relationship with our customers. I'm also a redneck fisherman. Partial closure, I understand that. But for me, it comes down to feeding my kids. I have a lot of things I could do as a Marine major with my experience. I choose this. GAF, let me be able to choose. I'm the professional. I hope you guys represent our opinions, and thank you, everyone, for coming.
That's it? That's it. Season, yeah, just a moment, please.
Where are you on sizes?
40's fine.
Okay. And seasons?
Four. Keep it open. Let us fish when they're there. We know the fish. We know our clients.
Okay.
They want to fish when the fish are there.
Sure. That makes sense.
They come up all times a year.
Thank you for your service and your comments. I know there are some people that, I don't know if there's anybody else that wants to talk. You may not after I say this. What we'll do next is we're going to take a raising of hands. We're going to count hands on each of these questions so that we get everybody's input. If that's okay with staff. I think staff suggested it. It's not my brainchild, but that's a great idea. So I know a lot of people don't like to talk, but... So, excuse me. You certainly can, please.
A couple of charter boat captains talking about the per day or per trip issue that we need to kind of get worked out. You know, if we're doing 4-hour trips, you know, it's limiting us to one trip a day where we can
right.
A 6 to 12 and a 12 to 4.
Naaman.
Chris Martin. So, before we get that, can we bring that issue up to how we're going to address the per trip per day? Because right now, per day, it's limited us. If we're doing 4 hours trip and we're catching 3 or 4 fish, it's limited us to one trip per day. Where, you know, we can fish from 6 to 12 and then 1 to 5.
Right.
You know, 2 trips. So right now the way it's worded, it's limited us to 1 charter per day.
And yeah,
if we want to do 3 or 5 hour charters, we'd like to be able to do more than one in one day.
Yeah, that's
why. You can catch these fish at night and you can catch them early in the morning. So it's very possible for us to fish in the morning and have a charter and come in, eat lunch, and take an afternoon charter out. And we want to be able to do that.
All right. Well, that's why I brought it up. And what we'll do is we'll take a vote on it, and that will go before the commission, and the commission will decide based on everybody's input. So is there anyone else that wants to speak before we do a count? Yes, sir, please.
My name is Craig Freeman. I'm charter captain, grade and scale sport fishing. I just like to say I haven't heard this mentioned yet, I don't think. A vessel limit of 4 fish, but only 1 fish over 50.
Right.
I don't know if that was mentioned, if I missed it, if it was. And as far as the rest of the stuff, everything everybody else said, I agree with.
Okay, great. Thank you very much. All right. If staff's ready. Oh, okay. Sorry, I couldn't see you for that. Couldn't see for the column, not a problem.
There's not a lot of recreational fishermen out here. It's a lot of charter boats, but I'm strictly recreational.
Your name, please?
I'm Jeremy Custian.
Okay.
I don't make a dime off of cobia fishing. I sure do spend a lot of money on it. I love to do it. I just spent $400 at Bass Pro Shops before I got here, just because I'm not on the side of the bridge very often. I'm from Virginia Beach. And I only have a 21-foot boat, and I work Monday through Friday. So if you shorten the season, you're just really shortening the time that I actually get to go catch fish. If Monday through Friday I got to go to work, Saturday and Sunday comes along and the wind's blowing, I've lost my whole week to get to go fishing. So that's all pretty much I have to say. But
okay, we appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right. Any comments or questions? Anybody else behind the column I can't see? Okay.
No one else wants to speak? I mean, this is a good chance.
Well, I think you should give him a chance, Jeff, before we
Well, I ask.
Can't make them.
Speak now or forever hold your peace.
Speak now or show up tomorrow.
All right.
My name is Zachary Hoffman. I own and operate salt treated fishing. This is kind of like everybody else has already said. I just like last time I told you, I make my entire living on cobia fishing. Not just my living, but I have another boat and another captain, so he also depends on this fishery for our living. I agree with everything Billy said, the four fish. I'd like to see the vessel limit of four. And I definitely, September, that's a, last year, with that was a tough loss for us because John and I, we probably fish easily 20 days in September. I mean, if you do the math at 750, you know, per boat, I mean, that's a substantial amount of money to help me get, help us get through the winter months, especially with the way the rock fishery is. We don't have ocean rock fishery anymore. I mean, that used to be a good benefit to help us get through the winter. So we've lost that, and then losing September, it made it really, really tough for us to get through the winter. So those extra few days will make up for the blow days that we lose during the summer that, you know, people from out of town that they can only go these days, it blows, they can't go. Kind of helps benefit for those. So that's all I got to say.
All right. We appreciate it again.
I've got a question for you, Zach.
Sure.
And the
netting thing. I'd like to bring that up as well. I've been cobia fishing my entire life. I've always used a gaff, and we've always had a net on the boat. At a young age, I was able to make a adult decision if that fish needed to be gaffed or netted. I feel like when every one of us that leave this room today, we all have to follow the rules, driving, stoplights. That so with the netting thing, you should be able to do what you want. We're all professionals here. We all fish. We should make that decision. I don't think that should be like another rule that we have to abide by.
Okay. Wes?
Yeah. With a 2-fish boat limit last year, mm-hmm. did you have any trouble booking charters for your 2 boats?
No, but I had a lot of gripe. I mean,
ultimately, you didn't lose.
To answer your question, no, I did not lose business of that. But I had a lot of explaining to do with that, and you know, that was a pain. But I didn't lose business over it. They still went fishing, but at the end of the day, like Mike Avery said, you know, you got 6 guys sitting on the dock, you got 2 fish, you know, you're having to sit there and divvy up 2 fish. It's just a lot of controversy that I feel like, you know, for being a boat limit, it's already being conservation enough. So I'd like to see 4.
Okay. Thank you very much. All right, we're going to take a show of hands for these different questions now, unless somebody else wants to speak. Seeing none. Keep in mind that the commission wants to make us look as good as possible, like we're being as conservative as possible. So if you can cut back in one area, like a season start date or something, or the number of fish on the boat, if that won't affect you as much as it would somebody else, let us know what your opinion is on that item. And we'll give all of that to the commission, and they'll make the decision tomorrow. So how many people would be happy just leaving the regulations as they are right now from last year? And let me read those to you just so that we're not confused and up to date. 1 per person per day, 2 per boat, if more than one aboard, of course. Closed August 30th, minimum size 40-inch, and only 1 fish on board more than 50-inch. Anybody satisfied with that, knowing that we've got these other options coming up? See none. All right. The next one's a vessel limit. I say 1 in the on the list there, and that was given to us, but I don't think anybody wants a vessel limit of 1. So how many people can live with a vessel limit of 2? Was that, were you raising your hand?
Well, most of the charter guys are at most 6 people.
Right. Well, up to 6. Most of them actually are smaller boats for this.
But the most of it would be 6
Right. I tell you what, come up and give us your name, please, so that we got it on the record here.
Richard Finney, I'm a recreational fisherman.
Okay.
Looking at these numbers and statistics and the guys and the folks who do it, yes, they do have to go out and live in these boats. They're expensive. Their time is, you know, valuable. There are blow days, whoop seasonal years that we have. In due fairness of being on charters and gone out and booked charters myself, it is a major pain to get there and try to split, you know, a fish between guys, especially if you've got six guys on, you've got two fish, and you've just dropped, you know, $1,000 to go do something.
Right.
Six fish, or at most, is going to six boat charter. I think three fish. Somebody's going to get at least half a fish at most. So I think that, you know, expectations of your professional fishermen or your professional guys, they at least can boast that, you know, you're going to walk away with a half a fish if we're in the catch. The dates that you're throwing around, seasonal water warmth, those things that come into play, I think that the May 15th day is a fair date. It gives these guys time to get out, get geared up, get their skills honed, get their boats, you know, tuned up, then go out, and they can start promoting the business and promoting the catch. And we recreational guys, that's just when we're starting to get time off of work and being able to get out there and get our gear together. So it's not that much of a concentrated effort. And the date of the September, the, you know, middle of the month, September, the season winded down, I think those are all fair dates. But you got a good start time, you got a good end time, that everybody has a chance to make the money. We have, as recreational fishermen, the effort's not that big. The amount of, you know, the size is great. The fish that are producing from, I don't know that much about the statistics, but if it's the big fish and they're the female fish, then leave them alone. And I think the size that you're offering is great. I think that those things, gaffing, I'm a firm believer that, you know, I just soon net the fish. If I have the chance to get that fish on board and eat it, I can do it with a net. I'm not a great skilled fisherman, but I do want to make sure whenever I'm taken out of water, I'm going to have the opportunity, and I don't want to waste the resource. So, you know, being out there handling a gaff, I'm fair at it. If we have somebody on the boat and they're novice, I don't want them with a gaff in hand. Next, I got a gouge in my boat. I've got some kid with a black eye because somebody's getting excited and wheeling this thing around. So I just feel that the as a commercial or as a recreational fisherman, that, you know, I just soon have a net on board. That's just my opinion.
Okay.
The trip per day, you know, that's tough. Being a businessman, I don't know if it's a way to word it that you either have a boat limit of three and you go out two, but if you catch, you know, your three in that boat on that trip, you're done. If you catch one on that or two on that, and you've got somebody who wants to go out and you can still book another charter in, you can reasonably log at. I know that's hard to do. I just in fall.
I thought, yeah.
Is that if you had the opportunity and you didn't catch your limit, you caught one fish, if there's some way that could be done.
Okay.
But hearing these guys talk and what's up there, I agree that the opportunity to fish is very rare, and that the amount of money you spent to go to get ready to fish between the boat, the gear, and the gas, keeping the boat, and the taxes that you have to pay, and the people here that your staff are saying, you know, it doesn't really make that much of a difference between the end of the season and the beginning of the season. It's not that much of an impact on the fish because of the effort involved. That's just my thoughts on it.
Okay. We appreciate it. Thank you very much. Okay, back to the list here. We don't want a vessel limit of one. How many of you guys can live with a vessel limit of two per day? Or per, let's say per trip for the time being. Nobody. Who would like to see it it go up to three per trip. Can you live with that? Got one gentleman there that just spoke that would like, could
so
do
it's
with.
Not daily vessel, this is just.
Well, we'll get into the how many trips a day at the end here.
So where we are with our advertised public hearing, starting in 2013, the commissioner at the time asked that all staff meet for regulatory review prior to any draft regulations that came into place. It includes our licensing department, it includes our IT department, of course, law enforcement, fisheries management, habitat management. We never had this per day or per trip discussion. I'm not saying it's not something that the commission can consider.
Oh, it's been on the books that way for striped bass.
Yeah. What I'm saying is I would not, without having that reviewed by a regulatory review committee and hearing what law enforcement thinks about moving to a per trip instead of a daily vessel limit.
It's not moving. That's what the current regulation is. It's per vessel day.
Per vessel day.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So.
So there.
We won't discuss that.
Both of these aren't. Are you saying they're both the same, or one of them would be moving?
No. So the issue I can see is how does an enforcement staff know that Ralph was on shift this morning, and he visited one of these charter boats, and they had three fish on board, or four fish, or whatever the limit is, and they were coming back in. And then Johnny's on shift in the evening, and he bumps into the same boat. Now, yes, if you have a fancy computer system and you get it all in there, somebody can maybe write him an after-the-fact ticket. But the two officers, unless they have communicated, don't know that both of them have intercepted the same vessel, and in both times they had different people on board and fish.
All right.
It's the same problem with striped bass, with people going back to the dock, dropping them off in the cooler and then going back out again. I mean,
okay,
it's hard to enforce.
We've got another situation where the people that abuse it have made it rough on everybody that wants to be fair.
Yeah.
So for now, we'll consider everything to be per day. We need to address with the commission how you get two charter trips in the same day. But for now, for the rest of our questions, it's going to be per day.
Yeah. I mean, I really don't think that we would be able to take it to the commission without another review. In other words, basically a second public hearing.
Well, we can start that process. But for right now, for tomorrow's meeting, we're talking about per day. Yes, sir.
No.
Unfortunately, it's read by the lawyers or the others as per possession limit per day.
No, it actually says per day in the regulation.
All right, it's not critical, Tom. We'll go with this because staff's going to shoot us down It's going to correct us if we stick with that. So, how many people can live with a vessel limit of three per day? I have one. All right. A vessel limit of four per day, can you live with that? Can you count? Who's going to count those?
Thirty-nine based on 41 people in the room.
Hold them up. Excuse me. Hold them up until we get a good count. Not everybody wants it, so.
Can they move around so I can see if everybody wants it?
Yeah, they will.
I counted 40. That's 2 million pounds of people. So, yeah.
Okay.
Give or take, I'll check.
I don't think we want to push it and try for a five per day.
I have a spin on that.
All right, Tom has a spin.
And unfortunately, it's not clear. The question is, if it could be four per day, where the mate and the captain on a charter do not count. So that means if you only take two people out, you're limited to two fish.
But that means both of them get to take home a fish. But on the other hand, I look at this fishery from an execution of the fishery and catching the most fish. It's you charter guys that are out there every day with the towers that are really doing the catching. So I think that that is still within the bounds of the public notice, because you did say two.
So it'd be listed like up to four?
It would be, what I would propose would be four per vessel, but the charter captain and mate do not count towards that limit. So it's one per person or four per vessel. If you have four people, if you have six people on your boat, you can only keep four. But if you only have two people you're taking out, you can keep two fish.
We went over that this morning, or earlier today, and it's that as the law is written right now, the captain and mate are counted towards that count.
Right, yeah. We can't think of any exclusions in our regulations, but it does exist, and it's certainly something that's why we have counsel representing. I think we can put that.
Yeah, and you can.
All right, so let's make that the next question. How many people are okay with not counting the captain and the mate, if there is one, towards that four fish per day count?
Now, there you're talking specifically charter boats, right?
Yes, like charter boats.
Technically, a recreational boat has a
captain. Right, correct.
No, but it's for charters.
Charter.
Yeah, and not
charters only.
When it's a charter.
Right.
Yeah.
So say me and my mate go to the one fishing,
and you take.
We don't have a trip. So
when you're.
Yeah.
On a charter trip.
That doesn't count. That's a recreational. You're putting your recreational hat on that day.
Any type of sector separation, I think, is a bad idea. My personal opinion.
Okay.
Because you're pitting us versus them. I'm a recreational guy. And
yeah.
We all are on the same team here. That's why we're all sitting here together. So my personal opinion is that you do.
But if they go out every day and they're allowed four per boat, that really gives their customers, if they have two customers, two fish. Each. So, anyhow, is that something you would like Joe to mention, to include in your recommendation to the commission tomorrow, that they exempt the captain and the mate on a charter trip?
Well, I don't know if staff is ready to, but we'll certainly, if it's something that comes out of either the committee or we'll
all right. Okay.
But I think that would only apply, in the way I'm putting it, if the limit goes up to four fish or three fish. You know, it one or two fish, then if they take one guy out and he's paying $750 for that trip, you should keep his two fish.
Just as a general, the simpler we can keep it, the better. As a charter captain, we already have explained what to do on the limit.
Right.
We already have a questionable thing about half-day trips. And then we have, in addition to that, a guy catches a 50-incher and we gaff, don't get, if we gaff him, or he's in the box, he's a caught fish, he's our fish, and the next guy catches a 54 and he's looking at you like, I just committed the same amount of money to this trip and I don't get a chance. I understand the reason why we do it and I support it, but it just puts us in a tougher predicament to constantly have to explain ourselves and explain the law.
I understand it, but we need... In my opinion, we need to show some attempt to be more conservative. At least give them an option.
Absolutely. I'm just using that as a okay. point to make it as simple as possible.
So how many people would like to see or could live with the captain and the mate being exempted from the count of fish? Are we counting, gentlemen?
Yeah, that's the way I would...
Well, it can't be if... Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
What was the number?
20. All right, on the season start date... Before we get into season start, let's see the safest way to present this. Joe, what did you say for spawning purposes? You said May 15th, right?
No, I just simply said that any fish not harvested, killed in May general, you know, we know that fish that are here in May haven't had a chance to spawn yet. And it's very likely that these fish, you know, there's not a lot of studies about it, but it's very likely that these fish are batch spawners, because we see fish still holding eggs in September even, in late August, but it's not likely that that is the same amount of eggs that they were holding in May or June.
Okay. Yes, Ryan.
This is just entirely a suggestion, but if you wanted to keep it to four options, like with the vessel, you could do, you know, opening effective immediately, May 15th, June 1st, June 15th, or something like that. It seemed like most of the specific suggestions were around that middle of the day. Or, I mean, if you go any earlier than that, you might as well not even have it set open.
Right.
Start with that.
Okay. Yeah, I was going to end with that. Of the options of May 15th, May 30th, and no closure at all in the starting date of January 1st, how many of you could live with May 15th? Yes, sir. Okay. All right. Okay, thank you. Hands down.
What was that? 36?
Of those that didn't vote for May 15th, how many of you would prefer June 1st instead? Okay.
Those of you that voted for on the 15th, how many could live in first?
Yeah,
right.
I think that's the key.
All right. Well, I think I'm pretty sure our recommendation, at least for the audience, is going to be four fish. That was pretty obvious. Anybody prefer June 15th start date? All right, we've gone through those examples.
Except for one thing, you didn't say how many people, even if you voted for for May 15th, could support June 1st.
Because they had gave me the options before.
You asked the question, how many people can live with May 15th? How many people can
before live I said with that, I said how many can live with May 15th or the end of May or the start of May? Of all those three options. Thank you. Closure date, middle of August. Okay, let's give you three options there. Middle of August, end of August, middle of September, end of September, no closure date. Of those four options.
That's six.
Who can live with the middle of August? Who can live with the end of August? Middle of September? Okay, end of September. Anybody think we need a change to the minimum size? All right, we'll skip over that one. How many of you do not want to allow gaffing at, well, we've got two choices here, at the pier or in the boat? Okay, let's start with the pier then, at your suggestion. How many of you think the gaffing should be an option on a pier? All right.
How many was that?
37. How many think there should be no gaffing on a boat? No gaffing on a boat? Got one. Okay. And we know that for now, yes, sir.
The one fish over 50 inch per vessel.
That, we can bring it up if you like. I think everybody's in agreement on that, but we'll just find out. One fish over 50 inches, anybody?
With four
fish. Anybody have a problem with that?
Everybody's okay.
All right, thank you. All right, yes, sir.
And something this is just a suggestion, I'll have to take it, but I've heard a lot of people say, well, if we have this, I'm okay with this, or if we have this, I'm okay with that. So one thing we might be able to do is just run through these items and say, for how many people is the season start date the most important thing to them? Or for how many people is the vessel limit the most important thing? You know, kind of the last thing you want to budge on. I don't know if that's clear to people or if they think it'll help, but...
If you want to... I thought it was pretty clear, but if you want to take that, run with it. Ryan?
Well, okay. People are shaking their heads.
Okay. I think it's pretty much understood, so... So that brings it back to the committee. I think I was finished. Nobody had any objections. Okay. All right, that's okay. Anybody on the committee want to stick with the 2016 regs?
I think we're looking for a motion.
Anybody on the committee want to... To do what?
I would like to make a motion that we open the season on May 15th, close it on September 15th, go to a four-fish vessel limit, except the captain and mate do not count towards that four-fish limit. When they're when it's on a charter, when it's on a charter trip. That's the motion I'd like to make.
Okay, we can take that path if you want, Tom. What are the dates?
I didn't say anything about the gap.
What are the dates?
May 15th to September 15th.
No comment on the gap. All right. Discussion on the motion. Does everybody understand the motion on the committee?
I'll say something because I don't think I'll even vote on the motion. But I've been doing this a very long time. Somebody mentioned Rob O'Reilly earlier. I was on Finfish 2 months before he started work. I remember when he came to the first one. So that's how long. I predate everybody except maybe Lewis. I'm not sure. I've seen a lot of stuff pass with bad science. You know, everybody's saying this is bad science. You don't believe what we're seeing, and you're probably right. I've seen stuff. You know, I was the biggest shad fisherman in the state of Virginia, and now I'm lad none. And the science said that we weren't causing a problem, but they still shut me down. You know, I was a big shark fisherman. I can't do that any longer. So they're going to assume we caught 900,000 pounds. You can think anything you want. That's what their assumption is going to be. We're going to have to convince them differently somehow that we did not take 900,000 pounds. You don't realize now that we're overfishing. That has a certain problems. Overfish takes away almost all your options. Once you go across that line, your options change drastically. You know, I don't have no dog in this fight. I used to catch a lot of cobia years ago, but all the fisheries I caught them in are now closed. So I don't catch them anymore. You know, as far as two trips a day. I like to make two trips a day a lot of times on stuff, but I'm not allowed to. You know, being a commercial fisherman, just like mandatory reporting, I don't know what this mandatory reporting is going to look like. But in the commercial side, if I do something wrong, they take people's license every Tuesday, every fourth Tuesday of the month, they take somebody's license. They've taken more in the last 4 or 5 years than they have in my lifetime by far. I was on the commission for 8 years. We took four or five sets of license in 8 years. I've seen them take that many in a day. I mean, most of it's law enforcement violations. It's not necessarily mandatory, but it is some mandatory reporting violations, too. Take your license for 2 years. Now, so saying there's no consequences down the road, it may be. I just don't, you know, I wish I could offer some wisdom. I'm just telling you how things work out in life. Just because you don't agree with the science and 30-some fish or 20-some, whatever you said, is a ridiculous number for them to base that on. You know, they do these extrapolations, oh, yeah, it's right, but fishery science, everything is crystal clear until it changes. And then the new science is crystal clear, and the old science is not crystal clear anymore. It was wrong. But that's how it's been for the 30-some years I've been doing this. You know, if we're shooting next year, if ASMSC does something, you will be held to whatever number it is. Do you want to walk off the cliff then, or do you want to kind of walk down an incline? That's the choices you're going to have. You're either going to have to do some kind of a incline and hope you have a soft landing, or you're going to be like Lemmix and you're going to walk off the cliff and down by the ocean you're going. So saying that, you know, I really don't care. If this is what everybody wants, I've never seen fishery done by popularity, because if it did, boy, that's commercial fishery. We'd be a whole lot better off than we are now. But, you know, Tom Powers pretty well spoke against everything that I've ever spoke for in my life fishing. Almost everything I've ever spoken against.
Not everyone, yeah, he's right.
But, you know, popularity doesn't do anything. I, you know, all said and done, I'm going to stand for the motion. I just want you all to realize what can happen down the road. It may not be tonight. It may not be next month. But if ASMSC does something, we will adhere to it, or they'll close the whole state down.
Okay. Yeah, Joe, you can go first.
Well,
yeah.
Do you have a motion on the table? So you,
and no second.
Okay, let me.
Motion is,
just say. Let me add that we're not presenting our recommendations to the ASMFC or the South Atlantic Council. We're presenting them to the Commission. The Commission has been very considerate lately of the fact that the science is wrong. They showed that last year. They're willing to take some risk. The reason we need to keep it to a limit is that they may not be willing to take some risk this year. Hopefully they will. But he's right. If the ASMFC gets it, and I personally hope they do, because there will be repercussions if we go over, but they will also have Virginia representation on that and North Carolina representation, much more than we get from the South Atlantic Council right now. So, and if we... if the ASMFC doesn't take it, then the feds may come in and do some things to us that we don't want to have happen either, because of the way that MRIP says we're exceeding, and in the feds' eyes could say that we're putting the population at risk. So he's exactly right. We got to think down the road. That's why I'm asking you what you can live with. That's what we'll ask for. And, Joe, you've got a little experience in this.
Being from the Outer Banks, I've fished with Willie Etheridge. He's a commercial fisherman, so I get drilled on it a lot. I'll be going to a dinner in Raleigh with a commercial fisherman, and I absolutely agree. Part of the reason that we are asking for these regulations is that we're trying to fix the future. And continuing to restrict is acceptance of unspeakable actions that have happened. They've been acknowledged. And Atlantic State's going to be a cliff either way. And nobody feels more for everybody than I'd say most of us cobia fishermen. We got burned. You know, we know what it feels like now for you commercial fishermen. It's tough. And that's why we're going to ask you today. We're going to ask the council tomorrow, you know, to vote with us, you know, make a strong statement so I can go next month to the AP meeting and say Virginia stands with us from the top to the bottom. We demand change. We demand a new stock assessment. We demand representation. We demand the Atlantic States not take management until the ACL can be worked out or the fixes to MRIP that are there can smooth out the catch totals. If it's a matter of sloping down or a cliff, I think it would be more justification to give us somewhat of a season what we're used to, because we're going to go off the cliff either way with them if it's not changed. And it won't be changed with a June 1st to August 15th, one per vessel. It's not. Thank you for letting me speak.
Okay, Tom, would you read the motion, please?
The motion was for four fish per vessel, with an exception that on a paid charter, the charter captain and mate do not count towards the one fish per person. One fish per person. I said May 15th to September 15th, and that was the end of the motion. Same size limit, and I did not mention the gaffing issue.
Okay, do we have a second? We have a second from John Bellow. Any discussion on the motion?
We have discussion.
Please, Wes.
I think we, the committee, should send a reasonable request to the, or idea to the commission. You know, like Ernie said, nobody in this room, I believe, believes what MRIP data came up with. But the commission is going to use those numbers, and all the regulatory agencies are going to use those numbers. Unfortunately, they're just bad, but that's what they're going to use. So last year we had a two fish boat limit and the restrictions we had. It is unrealistic to think that the commission is going to vote for a higher limit on things. We should give them something responsible. I mean, this is an irresponsible motion.
Okay, that's
based
okay.
on the data that they're going to.
That's all right. That's
I don't
one.
Believe it either.
One committee member's opinion, that's what we're here for. Skip?
With that being said, I also think that we need to take all of their wants into effect. You're strictly recreational fishermen, Wes. You don't have, fishing doesn't pay a penny for anything you have. And there's a whole lot of people in this room that count on that. So we as a committee should represent them also, along with the recreational fishermen. But I think we should stick with the four fish and recommend that to the commission and let them either take or shoot at. Nobody thought last year that they were going to go out of compliance, and they did, because that's what everybody said they should do. So I agree with the four fish.
Okay.
We're willing to out of compliance because there is no compliance measures. If ASMC takes over, there is compliance measures now. If four or less, we would like you to do this to reduce it. When ASMC takes over, it's you will do this. How are you going to do it? This is the minimum you're going to be lacking.
Well, maybe we'll have better science by then because we haven't, you know, restricted it down so much. I mean, it's the same thing with the tilefish now. You know, Virginia's had a 7-bag limit forever, so that's all they think we catch. And it's just, you can restrict yourself down. And, I mean, I understand what you're saying. I, you know, haven't been in all this as long as you have, but I've been fishing just about as long. And it just, at some point, even if, you know, let AFCMFC take it over and cross that bridge when we come to it. But at some point, something's got to be done with MRIP, because it's not just COBIA those numbers are crazy on. It's everything. And, you know, Congress has even said, you know, don't use those numbers. And they go, well, that's all we have. Okay. So.
All right. Just a minute. Does anybody want to make a friendly amendment to include a suggestion on gaffing? Or do we just want to leave that out of our recommendation? Okay, he's...
Point of clarification.
Yes, sir.
We're saying the current regulations relative to GAF would go forward as our recommendation.
As our recommendation.
And what is the current?
Which says no GAF, correct?
No GAF. Is that the regulation?
That is the regulation.
Yeah, the current reg is prohibition on all gapping.
Okay. Okay, Ryan, you had something else to add?
Yeah, I feel bad that it's not completely in line with the motion, but it's a plug that I was hoping to have an opportunity to make. And the discussion has really come toward that. So it seems like the theme from both the committee and the public, if there was two words to sum up the COBE issue, it would be bad blank. I heard it, data. And so people are saying we need to do something about the data. We, as VMRC, cannot change Congress. We cannot change MRIP at this time. But we've done what we can to respond to these concerns. We have a free permit that you can get. It's mandatory now. We piloted it last year. There's a permit, and with that permit comes the reporting requirements. And obviously there's a lot more people that are upset about it than are happy about it, but the fact is if we get good cooperation, if you all report what you catch, the trips that you go out, we as VMRC have something to say when we come to the commission or when we go to ASMFC or the council and say, these numbers are very high and here's what we have. And so I'm here shamelessly asking not only for y'all to get the permit and to report, but to talk to your friends, to talk to people you don't even know and say, this is important. This is going to make management better years down the road. We've gone to angling clubs and talked about it. We as staff are doing what we can. All the angling clubs that will respond to our emails. So now you asked about repercussions. It is mandatory. So obviously this is something that has to be done. Or else, you know, if you don't report, you don't get the permit next year. So this is a no-cost permit. You can get it online. We're trying to make it as easy as possible. You can report online or you can report using paper forms. So we've listened to a lot of concerns, a lot of stakeholder opinions, and we've tried to make this the best thing as possible. But the only thing that can get good data is anglers. We as staff can only do so much. So, you know, we kind of put it in your hands to not only do the reporting but to help get the word out. So at the risk of taking up more time, I thank you for listening to that little interjection. But
point well made.
I do think it could be provide a huge benefit.
Yeah, I agree. And let me add one more point. If you have a permit this year and you catch no fish, you still have to report it, or you don't get the permit next year. You don't have to get.
And is it not a crime if someone is on the water with cobia in the vessel and without a permit, they get a ticket?
Yeah, that would be.
And you get three tickets, you get three convictions, and you get brought before the commission.
Okay. All right, we have a motion before us. We have a second for the motion. I don't see any attempt to ask for a friendly amendment. Tom's not being that friendly today.
I'd like to make an amendment or a modification to amend it to a 3-fish boat limit.
All right. We have a motion for an amendment. Do we have a second for that motion to go to a 3-fish boat limit?
Does it need a second, or does it need a friendly amendment needs me to agree with it and John to second
line. Well, you'd have to agree with it, but I don't think we're going to go anywhere anyway. But
yeah. Okay. Well, I can agree with that amendment.
All right. So he will accept a friendly amendment to go to 3-fish. Is there a second for that?
John has to be the one to do that.
The seconder. Okay. All right. We don't have a second for it. So.
You can also do a substitute.
I think we've played it about as far as we can play it myself, but. All right, all in favor of the amendment, please say so by raising your right hand.
The amendment did not get approved.
Okay, I'm sorry. I shouldn't have said amendment. All in favor of the motion, raise your right hand. 2, 3, 4. All opposed? No votes? Motion carries. Sir, I'm sorry?
Was yours a null or?
Null.
And you abstained?
No, I'm the abstention.
Abstaining. He was too.
We both abstained.
Okay.
Too much going on here. Okay, that takes care of that. Any new business to come before the committee? Ernie Bowden would like to bring something up.
I want to start a discussion for down the road. We want to try to change things so family members can have a easier time transferring permits.
so we can have a generational shift. Some permits are easy to transfer. Some are almost impossible. Almost all your federal permits are very easy to transfer. It's just the state issue. And I like to see us work towards that. You know, it's an easy solution. General Assembly could have easily done it. I believe I could have, you know, got our senator, congressman to make it so you could have generational shift and family members. But I'd rather see it to a regulation to give flexibility to the commission, because if, you know, it's wrote in stone if they do it on Congress. This way you'd have some flexibility to, because things might change in the future. I don't foresee it, but it's a possibility. So I like to have that put on for an agenda item for our next meeting.
Okay.
We can, if anybody feels any
differently. What we'll do is, you know, just for starters, we'll present what permits are out there, what limited entry fisheries exist, and what the current regs are. So.
I mean, there's some permits, for example, is that death, but basically.
Right. Yeah. So we'll bring that to the table.
All right, and I'd like to make this a formal new business recommendation that we consider, staff consider, what it takes to have a trip limit versus a daily limit for commercial charter boats or recreational charter boats, whatever.
Or higher, yeah.
That perfect word, thank you. I know it happens all the time. People do it, so we need to address it. Anything else? A motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Second. We're adjourned. Thank you very much, everybody.
Interesting.
I think. Well,